Hello, good evening, welcome. I am Samuel Trapp. This is International Flavor, coming to you live from the Lake Ozark Real Estate of the Art Studio this wonderful Sunday night, the very first show of the week, I believe. I think I am the first one. I can't, you know what, I don't know if the power of truth was on this evening or not. Sadly, I wasn't paying attention. Too poor to pay attention, as some people are fond of saying. If you feel like calling in, please do. 573-746-8020. And we shall proceed with some of the hilarity of the... I wasn't here Thursday night. I was trying to figure out a little bit of a family event. I apologize for that, but we will proceed from here. My article was published in the Russian newspaper on that day. Had quite a bit of content on there. Have another one coming out this week, and I may write yet one more. I'm getting fond of writing these Russian stories, and they do continue to publish them. So long as they'll publish them, I'll freaking write them. How do you feel about that? But let's get into the hilarity of the day. Do you remember me telling you a little bit ago, it couldn't have been more than a month, about the Nobel Peace Prize not going to the old Trumpster, that he didn't get it? There's quite a few reasons for that. We'll go into some of them tonight. I don't know that this guy is necessarily a peace president. This could be a horror story of a year militarily, as far as regime change and money, you know, attacking for oil and threatening people for that. It's kind of crazy. Let's see. But the hilarity of the day begins with the Nobel Prize winner, Maria Corina Machado. Basically, she is calling the Nobel Peace Prize has gone to her, and she says the only way to oust the illegitimate Nicolas Maduro, she says, is for the U.S. to blow him up. Let's start a war. Let's do some regime change. This is nonsense, friends and neighbors. And of course, she's sitting in the catbird seat because they want her to take on over. Oh, been a rough week. Well, you know what? I completely forgot until my mother told me on the phone today that it was fall back. We gained an hour. Aren't you gaining an hour that way? Or are we losing an hour? Yeah, I think we gain an hour. Yeah. They're blowing up more drug boats, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about that. But let's, you know, what are we up to? Like 45 people blown up with no evidence? Just kill them. It's a peacetime president, right? Blow up everyone. we're going to bomb everybody. I'm sitting there thinking, well, maybe it's some kind of a deal. You leave me alone in Venezuela while I go for free oil there, or Nigeria while I go for more free oil there. And how about I leave you alone, Mr. Vladimir Vladimirovich, in the old Ukraine? We're not going to bother you over there. Haven't heard a lot of news on that recently. Not a whole lot going on. Let's tell you about the Washington's alleged anti-drug campaign off of the Venezuelan coast. The U.S. military buildup off Venezuela's coast will help bring about regime change, says opposition figure Maria Corina Machado. The Nobel Peace Prize winner this year said she would welcome, I welcome, U.S. strikes on the country if they will remove President Nicolas Maduro. Well, it doesn't matter. You know, if we what we need is more Ukraine-style democracy somewhere else, right? Oh, good stuff. And we'll get to some more stories on that. Washington's accused Maduro. Again, no proof. You know, they just make accusation, decide that's the deal. And he might be. I don't know. I don't care. But do more than just say it. Government says a lot. They never get anywhere. But Washington has been accusing Maduro of having ties to drug cartels. Oh, yeah. Just like, most of our politicians have ties, connections to the deep state. Washington calls Maduro a narco-terrorist. You throw in that word terrorist, and all the people who aren't paying attention or too dumb to read, all they see is terrorist. And that means we can blow them up. Let's blow up those ships in the Caribbean. Earlier this year, the old Trumpster deployed a naval armada to the Western Caribbean. And since September, U.S. forces have been blowing up alleged drug smuggling boats off of Venezuela. Media reports say that Washington is expanding its naval presence, suggesting that the mission could extend beyond counter-narcotics. It's not counter-narcotics now. This is blowing up people to make sure that we all shut up and nobody says a word about it because we don't care, and to see politically whether blowing up speedboats in the water is going to bother anybody. That's why we're doing it. And, Trump denies so far planning direct strikes in Venezuela. Although he did say he was sending the CIA there last week. Remember, we talked about that the CIA is operating inside of Venezuela in the efforts of creating some further regime change, right? But he's denying it and reportedly is reviewing strikes inside of Venezuela as a list of potential targets. He was asked on Bloomberg's The Michelle Hussein Show if she backs the U.S. military action. And Mercado said, "I believe escalation that's taking place is the only way to force Maduro to understand it's time to go." She claimed that Maduro illegally seized power in last year's election, from which she was barred from participation. Well, I don't understand why we're worried about elections in other countries. I mean, if we're worried about elections, again, why don't we have a look at Ukraine? There are no elections there. There's no democracy there. There's no alternative party there. There's only the man of the people, Vladimir Zelensky. Isn't that crazy? Mercado also claimed that opposition candidate Edmundo Gonzalez Urrutia won the election. Ousting Maduro, she says, will not be regime change since he's not the legitimate president anyway. But according to her, he is the head of the narco-terrorist structure. This is not regime change. This is enforcing the will of the Venezuelan people, she stressed. Now, when has anybody worried about the will of the people? If we're worried about the will of the people, I hate to say it again, but look on the other side of the planet away from Venezuela. Let's go back into Ukraine, where 76% was it in our thing last week said they're ready to end the war at the current lines. Did you hear about the helicopter crash? Oh, man, I got to find that one and see if I can give you the entertainment. It's not even entertainment. It's really sad. It's depressing. And so for a limited period of time, the Ukrainians were, they had a victory, a big one. But we shall see. It wasn't really, but that's what they've been pumping all over the place. It's depressing. So let's see. Anyway, let's finish with the Maduro genius telling us we ought to start laughing. This ought to be the Samuel Trapp comedy hour for this, because this is funny. Maduro accuses Mercado of channeling U.S. funds to fascist anti-government groups and calls her a front for Washington interference in Venezuelan affairs. Mercado, surprise, surprise, has close contacts with the U.S. government and has for decades. In 2005, President George W. Bush received her at the Oval Office. Does this mean we're all going to have to start wearing blazers and, you know, red ties? You know, if George Bush is still in charge, maybe we need to dress like him. Maybe a pair of cowboy. I have a couple of pair of cowboy boots. I could put them on with a pair of jeans, but as long as you wear a blazer, all is well. Later, asked if military force is the only way to remove Maduro, Mercado said the threat alone might be sufficient. So if we line up, how many warships was it? Like 7 or 8 and 60,000 freaking troops on them all? That maybe that will scare him into leaving. I don't know, but I sure hope we don't attack. That's so much for getting a Nobel Peace Prize, huh? That ain't going to work. She said, it was absolutely indispensable to have a credible threat. She added that the Venezuelan opposition is ready to take over the government. Oh, I bet she is. Backed by the military and the police, claiming that more than 80% of them are joining her, apparently, and will be part of this orderly transition as soon as it starts. So we'll trade one, alleged drug lord for the oil lords, right? We'll go in there, and that's the whole point. This whole thing is all about oil. Maduro denies U.S. drug trafficking accusations, accuses Trump of fabricating a new war. Caracas called the U.S. operations a violation of their sovereignty and a coup attempt, reportedly seeking help. Well, Caracas is reportedly seeking help from Russia, China, and Iran to strengthen its defenses. Russia ratified a strategic partnership treaty with Venezuela on Monday, less than a week ago, and of course condemns the U.S. efforts. So, what was I telling you? Well, we have this article said there were only so far 16,000 troops off the Venezuelan coast, according to the Washington Post. The American forces in the area reportedly include 8 Navy ships, a special ops vessel, and a nuclear submarine. How about that? The U.S. is deploying a massive military contingent to the area near Venezuela. The move may indicate plans to expand operations. The U.S. has repeatedly accused Venezuela of aiding narco-terrorists. This is an oil grab, people. This has put somebody in familiar to us all. It's happened before. This is what we do, and Trump's no different than the rest of them when it comes to globalists seizing power, assets, and giving them to U.S. businesses. Trump's a businessman, and Trump is doing the same thing that everyone else is, but he's using the army to do it. You know, I assume if he gave money to Maduro, what difference would it make? Do you think there ought to be some sort of effort to attempt to do it? No, they want to control it. So we have to put in, according to common belief, we have to engage in regime change. And then we have a puppet, a Zelensky South, you know, Zelensky South America puppet. We have the same thing. So crazy, crazy stuff. So 8 Navy warships. The aircraft carrier USS Gerald Ford, which is expected to arrive next week, will bring with it 3 more military vessels and 4,000 more military personnel. Additionally, F-35 fighter jets are stationed at a U.S. base in Puerto Rico. The arrival of the carrier group suggests Washington's plans extend beyond counter-narcotics. No! I can't believe it. You think? It says nothing to do with narcotics. It has everything to do with oil. Okay? Oh, boy. The director of the Americas Program in a Center for Strategic and International Studies added that U.S. President Trump has a month to make a major decision before the group would need to be redeployed. Multiple outlets have reported the White House has been weighing potential military action in Venezuela. Senator Rick Scott told CBS last night that Maduro's days are numbered. Remember me sharing some of that with you? He's not the only one to have said it. Washington Post claimed on Thursday that Washington had already identified potential targets, including military facilities. Allegedly, so you have to say it's all about drugs, these military facilities are allegedly used for drug smuggling. When asked about the report on Friday, Trump said, no, it's not true. But last month, Trump confirmed authorizing the CIA to carry out lethal covert ops in the region. Does that bother anyone, or is it just me? I mean, I suppose it's just me, because everybody I talk to about it seems reasonably okay with it. Nuts. Nutty stuff. We're going to go back to, where were we? Hello. I included some articles that I've been reviewing here. And one of the things I wanted to talk about was checkpoints and sea lanes and logistics between Russia and Belgorod and Russia and Belarus and Kaliningrad. Now, for those of you who don't know, and I don't know how often you look at a map or don't understand it, it's Kaliningrad is part of Russia, but it's on the Baltic Sea. And so it's on the other side of Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia. So it's a part of like a little island inside of Europe, but it's not an island, figurative island. It's a Russia outside, like Transnistria in Moldova, which they want to be part of the Russian country. And so Kaliningrad is, and it's on the Baltic Sea. And if you remember a couple of times, once while I was in Belarus, driving through to Lithuania, I may have told the story, I'm 90% sure I did, that the stops at the border are just nutty, and they drag on forever. And so, you know, they say, and it's true because I've seen it, but driving out of Lithuania into Belarus doesn't take any time at all. That, there's a big busload of us, and, you know, we waited in line for a little bit, but not very long, and then you just get out, do a bag drag, they check you all out, and the bus goes through, and you hop back on and keep on trucking, right? Maybe an hour and a half tops. But on the way back from Belarus into Lithuania, the passenger part, you know, like buses and cars, they're serious lines. There are three different lines going through. There are trucks hauling goods. There are commercial tourist buses and stuff like that. And then there's also a line for private vehicles, people, you know, driving around on, in their own private car. And those two go fairly quickly. The buses and well, fairly quickly, call it 4 to 6 hours. We were there like 4.5, if I recall, on the way out of Belarus. But the truckers and all the stories we heard, that that's not uncommon for even passenger buses and vehicles to wait, you know, up to, they tell you to, you know, plan for 24 hours just to cross the border because they're limiting who can come in, which is really weird because a Schengen visa allows you to travel all over Europe. And so you'd have to, if you have a Schengen, you ought to be able to get in there pretty quick, right? You ought to be able to, and then once you get in, you can go to any European country. But oh no, now it's stuck. And so I read a rather, it's kind of a comical thing that you read, and you see the logistical changes of what's happened, and the, and I'm going to tell you about how this works. There's been, you know, from checkpoints, sea lanes, how the Baltics have tried to squeeze Kaliningrad out of the Russian Federation, basically, and why the workarounds are faster than the alternatives. A lot of people claim that these blocks of Russian, Belarusian truckers trying to go through Lithuania to get to Kaliningrad are intentional, and they're just having them delayed so that they can squeeze Kaliningrad out of the Russian Federation and make them, you know, I don't know what, independent, become an EU, I don't know, subject, you know, something like that. But it hasn't been working. So, but there's been 20 years of promises, 2 years of sanctioned lawfare, and now balloons. Lithuania has shut the Belarus crossings. Thousands of trucks have stacked up. And Brussels reinterprets the rules of sanctions again. So we're going to look at how the Baltic choke points have been built, how Russia and Belarus have begun to route around them, and why the St. Petersburg-Kaliningrad Sea Bridge, which they've built, is here to stay. So before this all started, there was a Kaliningrad Compromise in 2002 and 2003 as Lithuania was preparing to join the EU, Moscow and Brussels struck a transit agreement so Russians could move people and products, goods, to and from Kaliningrad through Lithuania. And the way they did this, what the key instrument of it all is called Facilitated Transit Documents, the Kaliningrad Compromise. And what did it really mean? It meant that Lithuania got to keep its sovereignty and control of trucking. It, you know, it wasn't like a military corridor, but the EU pledged smooth transit consistent with this agreement that they had. So it set kind of a political expectation that Kaliningrad would not be isolated like a little island by EU borders, right? So Brussels, the EU, they promise continuity, but Vilnius keeps the keys. And that tension was, you know, heavy, but sat there for two decades and generally worked reasonably well. But since it was controlled only by Lithuania, and Lithuania hates Russians and Russia, and you can't even speak there, you know, Russian without people having a fit, you know, and canceling you even in the back of an Uber, like I told those stories. Nonsense. Belarus folks were trying to create some sort of alternative plan. And basically, the Ust-Luga, to the Baltiesk Rail and the ferry was, you know, started years ago, 20 years ago, let's call it. And railway ferries began shuttling these Ust-Luga Baltiesk in the late 2000s and 2010. They added ferries and rail to take the things from Belarus all the way to St. Petersburg, and then put them on a ferry. And the ferry, you know, a large transport ferry, not for people, but for containers, would just take them from St. Petersburg over to Kaliningrad, right? And so the timetable was formalized in 2020 with regular stuff. And there was a modern lift added in 2022, new dual fuel, ice class ferries, the Marshal Roskosovsky and General Chernyakovsky entered regular service. And there were legacy units, older ones, Ambal and Baltiesk, cycled in and out after they were refitted. And capacity has steadily expanded and gotten, you know, much larger. And these came from ferryshippingnews.com back then. And then from 23 to 25, operators have reported hundreds of voyages and hundreds of thousands of tons moved. And Rosmorport, which is the Russian Morskoy port, Morskoy means seaport, Russia seaport, it's a company. They plan more terminal upgrades at Baltiesk and Ust-Luga to raise the ceiling even further. So what's the translation of all this? The sea bridge is permanent. And so, you know, they're trying to avoid Lithuania altogether because Lithuania isn't, it's not that they're not honoring this agreement, but they're just going to make Russian truckers sit there, you know, 24 hours just to delay the goods. And, you know, there didn't seem to be any real reason for it. I mean, how long does it take to check someone's paperwork in a line? Most of us have been through the airport and see what it takes to enter another country. If you've traveled anywhere, and it shouldn't take much to review documents, to review shipping containers, that doesn't take very long. And other countries do it pretty quickly, you know. So they're talking about this quite a bit. But when politics is pinching, you know, the land routes, the sea route is going to swallow all that cargo, and that's what's going to happen. So from 21 to 23, there were a lot of border theatrics, and there was the first squeeze on the issue, right? So in 2021, there was a migration crisis, and they've been having all kinds of people headed into Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, from Ukraine mostly. And Latvia closed one of the two Belarus crossings, and they said that Minsk, that's Belarus, had engineered some sort of wave of foreigners to come and get into the country. Poland and Lithuania both started hardening their controls and stopping people from coming in, but the freight was still flowing, but much slower, a lot more friction. And Belarus started, you know, they were hit with at the ports first. Lithuania moved against Belarus potash, right? And then state rail termination, and it didn't target Kaliningrad. They were targeting Belarus to keep them from getting into Kaliningrad. And so it rewired the Belarus-Baltic logistics and set up, you know, a precedent for them. Policy would, you know, by port and rail. So before anyone ever touched any Kaliningrad cargo, you know, they were firing warning shots. You know, we're going to... the war was ramping up at this time, you know, and so they're really pushing to kick Russia out. And let's talk about the summer of 2022. And Lithuania tested a Kaliningrad ban. Okay, they wanted to ban it. In June and July of 2022, Lithuania began blocking rail transit of goods that were already approved by the EU. Steel and iron, cement, alcohol, and more. And claiming that, you know, the EU was stopping it. But it wasn't the EU, it was Lithuania itself. Moscow called it a blockade. And then on the 13th of July of 2022, the EU issued guidance. Road transit by Russian operators was now banned, but rail transit of goods to Kaliningrad is not prohibited. So they could do it by rail, just not by truck. But there would be volume controls and nothing that is dual-use items, nothing that could potentially be used by military. Lithuania said it would comply with this and then later lifted the rail ban. So the blockade attempts collapsed into a rail only that was allowed, but you couldn't do it trucking. So even at the peak political pressure, EU had to accommodate Kaliningrad rail, which is a legacy of that framework that had been in existence for 20 years. So the, you know, supposedly it was going to stay open, although Vilnius pulled the brakes, Brussels shifted the, you know, shifted it to rail. The trains could roll, but trucks could not. And then the workarounds became a little more difficult and politics were escalating. So the ferry lines became the backbone of it all. So Roskosovsky and Chernyakhovsky in service, and you know, they entered service in 23, and Baltiisk Amal came back after repairs. So this began moving millions and millions of tons through the port. And so, you know, they're modernizing terminals, they're up an additional 200 to 300 containers, you know, per route that they have been able to improve because of the increased size of these ferries, right? And so in October of 2025, I told you about this last month, Lithuania closed or restricted Belarus crossings for a month. Remember, there were, I don't know what was going on over there, but it was really a pretext. And they were talking about indefinite closure because they were talking about contraband cigarettes. Remember that when I told you about that a couple of weeks ago? They called it a hybrid attack on cigarettes from Europe because they're selling the cheap Russian ones, even shutting the Vilnius airports briefly. So 2,000 trucks were stranded in Belarus, and, you know, there were very few exemptions that were allowed to come out. Moscow warned Vilnius against new provocations affecting Kaliningrad. Baltic harassment, you know, continued, although they had a legal obligation to perform. Poland, 2025. Warsaw shut road and rail also with Belarus during these drills for, remember, Zapad 2025, the military drills in the West. And they were hitting the China-EU artery and then reopened under pressure because there were a lot of things going scarce. So they keep repeating this same story. Close a border on Monday, EU pressure, carve out Kaliningrad results by Wednesday, and then by Friday you can claim victory, you know, because you were able to shut down more transit into Kaliningrad. So right now, the Minsk, Belarus, St. Petersburg, Kaliningrad corridor, Minsk is announcing that, well, they're state forwarder anyway. Belta-More service is formalizing a multimodal route that completely skips Lithuania. They're taking rail to St. Petersburg, then a direct ferry without reloading to Kaliningrad with pre-booked ferry slots and a less than 10-day delivery, removing any Baltic choke points entirely, right? So it's plugging into existing Russian ferry spines. But why does this matter? Because even if Lithuania keeps exemptions for Kaliningrad rail, political risk is still high, as you've seen from them continuing to stop it. So the Seabridge turns into the default logistics route. So the money and all of the movement stays in Russia, and no transit fees, no tariffs, no anything on goods, because it's all going to stay Russia to Russia. And so Lithuania, once again, you know, kicks itself in the foot, right? But if your neighbor keeps playing with the gate, you know, you build your own gate, get around it, right? So with all the sanctions that are coming out and the ports and rail contract pressures and now border theatrics with all these, you know, crazy talks about cigarettes and anything else coming, how can you... All the workarounds. I tell you a lot about Russia getting creative to do and their allies getting creative to avoid these sanctions. And every time a new sanctions package comes out, Russia gets even more creative. And where there's a need, the money will find a way, right? And so all of these things, they're doing it. And everything that the West does, not just the U.S., but the EU and everyone else, is not, it'll be temporary hiccups, which every sanctions package has been. They're on their 19th sanctions package. The lunatics running the Baltics in Lithuania, Latvia, and to some extent Poland, are only kicking themselves in the rear end by stopping this transit. I mean, what do they expect Russia to do? You know, the geography, you know, EU can enforce their own rules, and but Russia and Belarus are again creating more what? Infrastructure, more ports, more ferries, more terminals. In the long game, this is going to reward hard infrastructure, you know, in Russia and everybody else. I mean, geez, it's ideology, right? The ideology of canceling everyone is just, you end up canceling yourself. And energy, logistics, transportation, all of that tends to favor Russia once again in these sanctions don't really, in my humble opinion, work all that well. I don't think that they do. So, I don't know. What, should Kaliningrad rail fail? Well, you can just take it up to the port in St. Petersburg and take it around there, right? Well, let's. What are we going to talk about here? We have another story. There were some more talk about Pokrovsk. I don't know if you recall from Wednesday night when we were talking about that. Pokrovsk is completely surrounded. And Vladimir Putin said that he would open it up for media to go in and talk to the Ukrainian soldiers that are surrounded. And said Western journalists, Ukrainian journalists would all be granted safe passage and no attack if they wanted to go and talk to him. So that has happened, and there's still some surrounding of Pokrovsk that has some very interesting ends. And there's a couple of people, while I was watching that to figure it out, there's been several stories about killing of mercenaries. Now, I realize that sounds like it has to do with the journalists that were going in. So far, I'm not aware of any journalists taking up Russia on the offer of going in order to finish that story out, I should tell you, because I don't want it to merge into what I'm about to tell you here, because somebody is reporting there's a couple of several different outlets that there's Polish and French mercenaries, up to 600 of them. The core claim is that two Iskander M's, which is a strategic rocket, hit an abandoned factory that was being used as a foreign mercenary camp near Kharkiv. And the video showed a pretty large mushroom, it was like cloud, you know, huge. It was probably a Fab 3000 at least. And it had a huge cloud and a collapse of a reinforced building. So the target was a French-Polish detachment that rotated from the Kupiansk region, and more than 600 were inside the halls at the time of the impact. And the saying this was electronic intelligence, electronic warfare, and recon groups from the strike detachment, Irlansi, the Irish, but it's a Russian group, but they call themselves the Irish, that they had infiltrated the area days in advance. And so, meanwhile, Russia is putting pressure on Kupiansk, Lyman, Pokrovsk. This is not random. There are people allegedly coming to assist Ukraine to try to bust through that line in Pokrovsk. And Russian intelligence is working to make sure that they aren't getting in, especially on the mercenary sides. Now, for a long time, they have stated that the Russians have stated that they are I'm sorry, excuse me, I had something in my throat there. They have said for a long time that they are not going to allow the mercenaries to, I don't know, not be struck in the area. They're going to treat any mercenaries that show up, whether they're foreigners or not, foreign detachment, whatever, they're going to blow them up anyway. They're going to treat them just like they would Ukrainians. And so that's what they're saying. And so they found this group of 600, and there's been three people or three different sources that have outlined it, but I haven't found anything about it in Western media just yet. But that doesn't mean we won't find something here in a little bit. And so these Iskander M's, which are short-range ballistic missiles, less than 500 kilometers, Mach 6 or 7, they're maneuverable upon re-entry. They have multiple conventional warheads. They can do fragmentation, cluster rounds, penetration, bunker busters. They're designed to beat area defenses and go after hard targets, right? So they can dodge, but they're fast, and they are pretty damn heavy. So the Patriot struggles against them, and multiple sources are summarizing that the ballistic missile interceptions by Patriots fell 37% from August to September, and Russia keeps tweaking its maneuvers and trajectory. This is bad news if you're sheltering big fixed sites like the one that allegedly blew up full of French and Polish mercenaries, right? So what we can confirm is EAD Daily, Izvestia English say that Iskanders hit the AFU locations and foreign mercenary sites around that same time frame. Russian Ministry of Defense says that week, and they, you know, last week they boasted that blowing up temporary deployment points and foreign mercenaries, but you know, Russia at Kupiansk and Pokrovsk are doing quite well. Allegedly, those 5,500 that are surrounded in Pokrovsk, they're starting to surrender, but I haven't found nothing mass surrender, but they're beginning to trickle in all the surrenderings. Nobody in the West has verified that 600 people, 600 mercenaries that were there, but the Chinese said it occurred. Their news agencies said that they had taken out a foreign fighter camp near Kharkiv with French and Polish, and about 600 present. The Chinese said it. So whether the 600 number holds up or not, the pattern is pretty clear. Russia's, you know, mixing infiltration, electronic warfare, and ballistics, and squeezing Kupiansk and Pokrovsk. And Western trackers say that there's tons of infiltration pressure. Patriot performance is way substandard. And so what would be the net effect of this is that foreign fighters are definitely a priority target for Russia. That they find them, they're going to blow them up. And if you have a huge conglomeration of them, or even I mean, 600 wouldn't necessarily be huge, but that's a bad bet to put that many in the same facility, because one Iskander can take all of that out, and without having any Patriot defenses, that's a fool's errand if that's what's really happening. I don't know, but these rear area hammers, you know, that they're blowing up these people further into the rear, it's not good, and there's no air defenses. It's another note of there's zero air defense. By the way, I saw an article today about Trump starting to allow sent more ATACMS missiles, to Kyiv, and that he's going to allow deeper strikes inside of Russia. So once again, our non-wartime president it doesn't like war. He's our alleged peace god, is now going to escalate by sending more missiles, no Tomahawks, but sending more ATACMS to Ukraine. Now, I haven't seen that confirmed yet, but there's been a couple of good sources report it. Not sure where that's going to end up, right? So, Maria Zakharova gave her briefing on Friday, just like she does every Friday, and it was a long briefing. I only got to listen to the first half of it because I didn't have enough time. And she's still talking about these civilian targeting by the Russians. I mean, I'm sorry, by the Ukrainians against the Russians, that they're targeting the civilians. And the Ministry of Foreign Affairs is saying that drone and artillery strikes on civilians across Belgrade, Bryansk, Voronezh, Donetsk, Kherson, and Moscow. And they're killing minors again. She, like I said, she does, every week she talks about that. And she goes through, I'll call it 15, 20 incidents that occurred. And she said over the last week alone, dozens of Russian civilians, including children, have been killed in the Belgorod region. And they're using HIMARS. And, you know, they're bombing into homes of these people. She talked about the Coalition of the Willing. Still had a London meeting, and they're still trying to get the asset grab. Remember talking about that in the middle of last week. So they hosted Zelensky, and they're pushing more arms out for his use. And they're all trying to figure out how to take Russian assets more than they already had. Zakharova called it a cash out. You know, they're stealing money because they can't afford it to pay for it themselves, so they just steal it. And they don't have money for their own voters, but they'll pledge Ukraine cash by stealing from another country. That's their business model. Isn't that crazy? It's... They want to, Sweden wants to, just like this came up at that meeting too. They want to part fund via the frozen Russian assets, is what they want to do. They want to help. Everybody's trying to figure out how to steal that money out of the bank and use it to give it to Ukraine and let them. It's somebody else's assets. Isn't that crazy? And there was another little scandal in Kaya Kallas talking about the International Criminal Court. So the Ministry of Foreign Affairs says the International Criminal Court is not a UN body. And the EU officials are politicizing law and the but they don't follow the ICC, even though they're all members of it. And so, and it's against the law what they're doing regarding Russian sanctions. So Brussels gets to shout about international law, but push political tribunals and asset seizures. Do what I say, not what I do. And they bend the law for their own purposes and stealing money, in my view. And in Maria Zakharova's, and is just stealing the money. They'll take it. But that's okay, because we're on the good guy side, right? So people should be able to take it. Nonsense. No, I'm not going to read that one. We're going to skip that. Cuba embargo vote. Did you hear about that coming up? The Cuba wants to have a new vote and want to have themselves removed from the U.S. terrorist list. And, 165 nations agreed and told Washington to end this Cuba nonsense. And one more time, that the alleged rules-based order lost the votes. And I don't know. We always seem to be on the we always seem to be on the dominant side. If a certain country has assets, you know, like Venezuela, like African countries that have lots of gold or rare earths, But Cuba can't join the world order even now. Wasn't it the Obama monster that added him in when he was in office, and then somehow they fell into bad behavior again after that? Let's see. I have a couple of more. I wanted to try to get into old Solovyov. He did a show that he wanted to call, well, somebody wanted to call, a large chessboard. And this show came out, it's actually Sunday night show, but for them, the show is late at night, so it actually finishes very early in the morning. And so 4 or 5 hours ago is when this would have came out, right? And it's a long part of it, and I want to cover some of it, but it might take just a few minutes to pull up the part that I want and see if we can get further into that. And before we go there all the way, I wanted to tell you about the new nuclear submarine. So U.S. sent a nuclear submarine down to Venezuela, and Russia launched a new nuclear submarine as well. And they held a ceremony today that unveiled the new nuclear submarine, which is called the Khabarovsk, Russian Defense Ministry said. It's designed to carry massive torpedo-shaped nuclear-powered Poseidon drones. So the ceremony took place in Severodvinsk and was attended by Andrei Belousov and other top brass. Andrei Belousov is the Russian defense minister. And he said, "Today is a significant event for us. The heavy nuclear-powered missile cruiser Khabarovsk is being launched from the slipway of the renowned Sevmash shipyard," he said. "Carrying underwater weapons and robotic systems, it will enable us to successfully accomplish missions related to ensuring the security of Russia's maritime borders and protecting national interests in various parts of the world oceans." He added that the submarine has to complete a series of tests, and he wished the crew well. The Khabarovsk was specifically designed and built for the Poseidon. Former chief of Russian naval staff, Admiral Viktor Kravchenko, told the outlet Saturday. The Poseidon cannot currently be intercepted by any means, according to Russian President Vladimir Putin. Earlier this week, Russia carried out tests involving state-of-the-art drones, as well as the unlimited-range Burevestnik. These announcements have come amid a stall in the peace talks. U.S. President Trump said on Thursday that he has instructed the Department of War to start testing nuclear weapons again, citing strategic competition with Russia and China. But Russia is not, so far, in an arms race with the U.S., said Dmitry Peskov on Thursday when asked about this. Now, I haven't heard any real cover for us. I haven't seen U.S. nuclear testing as being, I've seen a couple of headlines on it, but nothing from the U.S. side that says we're getting ready to start up again with nuclear testing. And the only place we do that is underground unless things have changed dramatically, that's the way it goes. But I haven't seen it anywhere else. Let's see. There was, well, I already shared that with you last week because that seems to be a repeat, so I'm not going to go there. I think what we're going to do is go into further world turmoil, and which is continual. And this article, I don't know, it's a little bit long. I'm not sure I want to share it all. I think I might. You know what? I think I'm going to skip it for now. Sorry I mentioned it. Let's go to the clown show. Let's go to Zelensky and see what he has to say these days. This just came out today. And allegedly, because we don't know, Kyiv has received additional U.S.-made Patriot air defense systems from Germany, he said. Ukraine has been pressing its Western backers for more long-range weapons, Tomahawk cruise missiles, and additional Patriot battles. The New York Times said in May that although the country possessed 8 Patriot systems, only 6 were operational. But in a post on X on Sunday, Zelensky thanked German Chancellor Friedrich Merz by saying, "Our agreements have been fulfilled. More Patriots are in Ukraine now and are being put into operation. Of course, more systems are needed to protect key infrastructure sites and our cities across Ukraine. And we will continue working to obtain them, not only at political level with states and leaders, but directly with manufacturers of all necessary air defense systems and missiles for them." The Russian Defense Ministry has claimed to have destroyed about 40 Patriot launcher systems since 2023. 40. Wonder how many there were in total. I mean, they are expensive. While the U.S. President Trump has declined Tomahawks, he is allowing NATO countries to purchase more American weapons on Kyiv's behalf. Moscow says that no amount of foreign aid will change the battlefield into Ukraine's favor. Last month, Zelensky said the Ukraine and the U.S. were preparing a contract for 25 more Patriot systems. And he said, this is great, this part. He said that the deliveries could take years unless the EU states demonstrate goodwill by prioritizing Kyiv or transferring their own systems, like Germany just did. With each system costing approximately $1 billion, Ukraine hopes to finance the purchases by using Russian assets. I tell you what, watch out where you put your money. Put it in a Western bank and it, you know, they'll just seize it. Nonsense. Did you hear this horrible story about this people getting stabbed on a train in the UK? This is nuts. Multiple people were stabbed on a train near Cambridge in East England. 2 suspects were detained. Ambulances and armed units were dispatched. Armed officers attended. A train was stopped at Huntington, where 2 men were arrested, and a number of people had to be taken to the hospital. Police said 10 people were hospitalized, all but one with life-threatening injuries. British Transport Police said the terrorism alert was declared at one point, but was then rescinded. Chief Superintendent Chris Casey said it would not be appropriate to speculate about motive. Well, why wouldn't it be? You know, this is nonsense. They said there was a 32-year-old man who was a black British national and a 35-year-old man, a British national of Caribbean descent, were arrested on the suspicion of attempted murder. Both were born in the UK. There was a video showing heavy police presence, but, you know, it doesn't show any of the, I mean, not that I'd want to see them anyway, but a witness told Sky News that he saw extremely bloodied passengers fleeing the assailants. The witnesses added that one passenger shouted, "They've got knives." And old Keir Starmer, the genius, condemned the appalling incident and thanked emergency services for their response. And his thoughts, of course, are with all of those affected. Yeah. And Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood said she was saddened and urged the public to avoid comment and speculation at this stage. Why? Why can't we comment and speculate? We need to figure out what's going on. And, you know, here we've got, what else do we have? Protesters and government supporters clashing on the streets of Belgrade. You know, here we are with Serbia problems. Supporters and opponents of Alexander Vucic and his ruling party were clashing on the streets on Sunday. And this is the first anniversary of the train station canopy collapse that killed 16 people. And here the protesters, many of them university students, are demanding accountability for the tragedy and have accused the government of corruption and mismanagement. No, who would believe that? There was one crowd led by Dejana Hrka, whose son died in the collapse. They had gathered outside the Serbian parliament building, and government supporters and students opposing protesters' tactics of blockading universities rallied in Pionierski Park, where they had been camping out since March. Tons of people out there, lots of police, and then, you know, clashes, hitting each other, all these things are broken out. There were a lot of videos. Vucic repeatedly claimed the protests were incited by people from abroad, and he rejected allegations that his own supporters were responsible for the clashes, and the blockaders can't tolerate a differing opinion, he told the TV station. Crazy stuff going on in the world is what I say. Let's see, where else are we going to go today? Did you hear about the UK mercenary that was found dead in Ukraine? I think I said something a little bit about it last week. Well, no, I didn't. I was telling somebody else about it. This is a kind of a sad story, but get this. So a UK mercenary joins the Ukrainian army and turns up dead. But the mother, you know, his mother wants to know what happened to him. Get this story. So there's a British mercenary killed in mysterious circumstances while allegedly fighting in Ukraine's International Legion. She has appealed to his former fellow colleagues to reveal the truth about his death. Jordan Chadwick, who is age 31, had served in the Scots Guards before joining the Ukraine Legion in late 2022. He was found dead in June of 2023, with his body bound and then dumped in a reservoir near Kramatorsk. His mother was told at the time the case was being treated as a murderer. On Friday, she told The Telegraph that 2 years later, she still has no answers and fears that her son was killed by members of his own unit. "I always knew Jordan would be in danger while serving in Ukraine, but I never thought the risk would come from people on whose side he was fighting. If there are witnesses to what happened, I would like to see them give evidence. This is a crazy story because there's been a couple of these. You know, the Telegraph's own investigation suggested that on the night of his death, Chadwick was drinking with other fighters at the base before an argument broke up. He was allegedly restrained with zip ties and driven away by the commander. And the group's commander was a British national known by the call sign Hugs. Hugs confirmed to the Telegraph that he had been investigated by Ukrainian police but was cleared. A Ukrainian detective told the paper that Chadwick's death was more of a misadventure instead of a murder, but the Telegraph noted widespread speculation among foreign fighters in Ukraine that infighting and cover-ups are not at all uncommon, as Ukrainian officials overlook internal disputes, even fatal ones. Chadwick's death is one of several violent incidents involving foreign nationals. There's another guy I'm going to tell you about named Daniel Burke, was shot by an Algerian-Australian fighter who then later fled Ukraine. And in November of 2023, a brawl left several members of the Legion also in the hospital. So there's another guy named Daniel Burke, and he was shot by an Australian national. And he tried to say the killing was an accident. So a coroner in the UK established that a British paratrooper, Daniel Burke, was killed in August 23 by a fellow foreign fighter on the British state broadcaster BBC quoted the coroner, Zach Gullumbeck, as saying the 36-year-old was killed by cowardice and dishonor. While there's evidence presented that it was an accident, I reject that based on evidence gathered by Ukrainian authorities and the Greater Manchester Police Department, he said. He added the former paratrooper was unarmed and unable to defend himself at the time of his death. And after Burke went missing, Ukrainian police questioned Abdul Fida Adam Nareen, an Australian known as Jihadi Adam. He told the authorities that he had shot Burke accidentally during target practice. But then he led officials to an underground pipe at a military training ground where Burke's corpse was buried. But Noreen's version of events were contradictory to the conclusions of the post-mortem. In addition, according to the BBC, ballistics tests conducted in Ukraine found the weapon could not have been fired accidentally. According to the article, Nureen fled Ukraine and is wanted by local authorities. In October, Sweden broadcaster SVT reported that a Swedish national who had fought alongside Kyiv's forces since 2022 had also been killed in action. Several weeks later, the family of a 22-year-old British man who had also fought with a national told the media that he perished at an undisclosed location. In November, Russia's RIA Novosti reported another 22-year-old British man had been captured in Kursk, 5 miles from Russian territory. The news agency shared video clips showed the man who said he had served as a signalman in the UK Army. And, you know, there's a lot of people that are dying over there. And even if they are the mercenaries, they're being thrown out to the front line. Let's see. I wanted to do a little bit about Solovyov, and he had some stories that came up, and there were quite a few topics in his three-hour show. But I only got to watch about an hour of it. So I'm only going to give you the first parts. There was a guy named, where is he? See if I can find it. They talked about tactics and technology on the front lines. That was an interesting segment. And talking mostly about drones. So Russia, on average, every day, every single day, is sending in 186, on average, drones, Shahid, you know, the big drones that look like, a mini airplane, basically. And those drones, 186 of them a day. And Ukraine is doing it too. But these FPV drops and have been devastating to what is going on for the Ukrainians. It's been pretty damn bad. And so we wanted to dig a little bit further into those and see how these tactics affect places like Pokrovsk and Krasnoarmeysk. You know, what's happening there is they have these UAV drones, pressure, small unit night pushes. I was talking to you about this a little bit last Wednesday, because the Russians have these loitering drones and they get a fly in there and they are doing drone attacks on, I mean, they're attacking other drones on the Ukrainian side. I mean, they're, of course they're drone attacks, but they're doing attacks on Ukrainian drones with their own drones. And then they can record, they have so many drones in the air that they can record drones being taken out. And of the Shahid variant, there's 168 every single night. And that doesn't include all the FPV drones that are going out as well. And it has helped them quite a bit, especially in Pokrovsk and Krasnoarmeysk. There was an article today and a short story on of a successful, allegedly, according to the Ukrainian side, and on the Russian side and quite a few other sides, it just, I mean, this is idiotic and foolish, right? So when I was in the military, I was an operator on a Black Hawk helicopter. It was an electronic warfare helicopter, so we had all kinds of electronic equipment in there. We could jam radio signals of, you know, from wherever on the battlefield. But our main job was collection of enemy intelligence, right? And so it was an interesting concept, and we could use, you know, could pinpoint a location back in the day when there weren't any pinpoints. That was a different system. But the only reason I bring that up is because on our flight line, our helicopters were the only ones that were equipped in full with all kinds of electronic warfare equipment. And our crew consisted of the two pilots and the operators, and two operators, one behind each pilot. And so there was nowhere for any other troops to be carried around, conveyed. There was so much electronic equipment that nobody could fit in there except the two soldiers that were in the back running the platforms. But on the flight line, there would be, I don't know, 60, 80, maybe even 100 helicopters out there. that were a different type. So I'm quite familiar with the Black Hawk, and I also am air assault qualified, which means you jump, or I was, wouldn't know if I'd be much qualified today. I got some funny stories about that, but I'd rather not go into them tonight. That was an interesting school. But the fact is that I'm quite familiar with the Black Hawk, and the Black Hawk is a pretty large helicopter. It carries, I believe the total crew capacity is either 10 or 12 soldiers. I don't remember off the top of my head, but and that I think includes the two pilots. So I think it's the 10, you know, people that can be carried easily in a crew transport Black Hawk, not an electronic warfare one. You couldn't fit any troops in there. But today, all over YouTube, Telegram, everywhere, they were talking about this air assault operation by the Ukrainian forces inside of Pokrovsk. Now, Pokrovsk is the city that is surrounded at present. And what they're saying is that the Ukrainians, and it's on video, it's out there on Telegram, you can watch this, and it just looks so stupid. It's like, who in the world would authorize this? And so later, Sirsky and one other guy were talking about the positive nature of this. I don't find it very positive. I think it was ridiculous that these helicopter guys are flying in for what? They basically the helicopters. I'm trying to find the right facts on this. The Russian side says that two UH-60A Blackhawks attempted to land troops on the northwest edge of Pokrovsk using two and possibly three Black Hawk helicopters. So remember, I told you that 5,500 soldiers are trapped in there in the Pokrovsk region, encircled by Russia. And Russia, you know, is picking them all off. Some of them are retreating. But the Ukrainians fly in these Black Hawks and drop off 11 soldiers. You see 11 soldiers get out of one of the helicopters. And then the helicopter gets blown up. And then, I don't mean to laugh about it, and then the soldiers get attacked by drones. You know, and they're running all together in one big clump of people. It's like, man, that's really strategic, isn't it? You make them all one big target. Why would you do that? And clearly not air assault qualified. And they're jumping out of there. I mean, you look at these Blackhawks. The Russians say that they took out one of the helicopters quite quickly and took out 15 soldiers at least that were killed in this failed operation. And it's the second attempt in the last 48 hours. I'm sitting there wondering, why in the world, what tactical or strategic or any advantage is that sort of attack going to make for you? Nothing. I mean, what's it going to make? The cumulative loss of between the two helicopters, the soldiers, they only blew up one of the helicopters. The other one flew out after dropping off its people. But allegedly, that could be up to, they say there were up to 20 soldiers and maybe three times this, two helicopters one time and then one more. And they say in the last 48 hours, and they say they have taken out, at least one UH-60 and there was video of it. And this is, they used to call us air insertion, or, you know, we were an air insertion team that you go in for a specific purpose, whether it's reconnaissance, whether it's something like that. But in Pokrovsk, what are they going to send them in for? I'm sitting there trying to find some kind of a strategic reason or a tactical reason for them to do this. And for me, it's just not making sense that you would fly in an area clearly dominated by Russian artillery, Russian drones, and to land, let your guys out, and then all over Telegram, watch the helicopter explode right after landing, and watch the 11 guys be hunted down by Russian drones, and all run into one group. It didn't take very much to get rid of them, to kill them all. And it's, who in the world is running the show over there? Why are you flying in to a region encircled by the Russians? What are 11 guys going to do to get 5,500 out? You know, oh, geez, what are you sending them messages? How many MREs could you carry in there? How much food? Not much. You know, how are you going to feed them all? What are you going to wait for manna from heaven or what? It something seems just really stupid. And there's talk, again, that they're trying to extract some trapped NATO officers. Now, I don't know about that. That was mentioned on Solovyov, too, that they're trying to assist somebody allegedly important in getting out. Well, the way to do that wouldn't be send in 35 people. It'd be to send in a Black Hawk and have that important person jump on the Black Hawk and fly out with them. Or something similar if you're going to do that. And I don't see it happening if the Russians control the airspaces like they do. So the pro-Russian outlets and military bloggers of all stripes say that there was a defeat of the landing, and they showed, you know, the claims and the footage. I saw the footage. But, you know, in the days of, you know, fakes online and everything, who the hell knows? But the Western analysis acknowledges that there were insertions, but they don't know whether they've been killed or not. And some Ukrainian sources are denying the kill count. They have said that there were 11 killed, but, you know, they talk about the fog of war. If Moscow's version is holds up, the Black Hawk insertions this close to the rail look like a high-risk attempt to get somebody important out of there. Evidence Kiev is under pressure inside the city perimeter. And, you know, the West is, everybody, we've talked about it and say that the insertions happened, but they won't say so far whether there were any losses immediately after or if they lost any Blackhawks out of it. They won't talk about it. And so, I don't know. This is a foolish method of attempting to win a war, because there's, even if there are high-value NATO people in there, how the hell are 11 guys going to take them out? Is it going to mean that somebody has to surrender? What do we know? What are we going to do about that? We're going to search in that story a little bit more and see if we can find anything more about it. Not for tonight, though. That's for tomorrow. Let's see. Well, as we wind down the show for this evening, I wanted to get into one more story for you. Oops, I moved to the wrong page on the analysis. This was rather comical as well. You know what? I'm not going to have time to go into it. It looks like we shall be wrapping up. Huh. I thought it still had a few minutes left. But I do not. It is time to close up for tonight. I very much appreciate you joining me. We will be here tomorrow night, just like we are every night, Sunday through Thursday, from 9 p.m. to 10:30 p.m. Here on damradio.com/live. You can listen to all of my prior shows at internationalflavor.com, where they all stored, or you can listen to them at damradio.com/podcast. I think that tomorrow's show, well, we'll get into, I want to get into some more about Venezuela. I appreciate you being here tonight. Please join us tomorrow. Good night.